Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
We bit that apple and the garden was lost. And so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solar-topia, solar-topia, solar-topia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solar-topia all over God.
Yeah, we're all over God's green world, for God's sakes. This is Harvey Wasserman, back to the Solar Topia Green Power and Wellness Show, another hour of heavy-duty politics. We have the great Greg Palast with us. Greg, you on?
I am on.
All right, buddy. You got your hat on, or you're going casual today?
Don't talk dirty. I always get a hat on when I see you, Harvey.
All right, man. Well, this is great Greg Palast, who has done so much incredible reporting over the years, including the most important stories to come out of the 2000-2004 election on the stripping of the voter rolls that cursed us with George W. Bush for eight goddamn... Actually, you know, I can actually say the F word, so I'm going to say it when it comes to George Bush. Eight fucking years of war and poverty. And, Greg, you did the reporting in Florida to show how the voter rolls were stripped. We're going to be joined by Bob Fitrakis and I think Scott Galindez from Reader Supported News or Mark Ash, one of them is going to join us. If you're on the line, Scott or Bob or Mark, give us a yell here right now, okay? Nobody yet. Okay, so Greg, we just had a so-called primary in Iowa and Hillary
It was a caucus. Primaries
oh, yeah,
where people
caucus.
Vote. Caucuses is where people caucus.
Yeah, it's a C caucus.
Whatever that is.
Right. And Hillary Clinton allegedly won. But my understanding is that she won based on six coin flips, and all of which she won. Did you follow that at all?
Well, yes. In fact, one of the odd things about a caucus is that unlike in a democracy where you count the votes, no one will release, the Democratic Party refuses to release the vote count. Because the Republicans do something that most people consider normal in an election. They say, Trump got this many votes and Rubio this many votes, etc. We have no idea what the vote count is in Iowa. I suspect if it was the popular vote, that Sanders probably won because of the demographics. Because in each caucus, you vote for delegates. You're ready to say, this is a little complicated, and it's supposed to be. You're not supposed to understand what's going on. So I'm going to break through the veil. Each caucus does not vote for a candidate. Rather, they vote for delegates who are committed to vote for another county delegates, vote for state delegates who are then committed to certain candidates for the National Democratic Convention. So it's a two-step remove from actually voting for, the three-step remove from voting for a candidate. So what happens is that in the college towns where, like University of Iowa, which had a caucus, Sanders absolutely crushed Clinton. But since it's only voting for a certain group of delegates, it doesn't matter how much you win by. So there is some proportioning. That's why you got these like 1/100th of a delegate. You know, just someone's knuckle gets the vote.
Right.
But it's a very weird system. It's like this kind of, and no one, there is no one yet who has told me exactly, and no one, including the Sanders campaign and the Clinton campaign, no one can tell me exactly what the formula is. So it's a simple answer like, well, just release the votes. Just tell me how many people voted for each of the candidates. And instead of saying, well, this one-tenth of a delegate was determined by a coin toss, because so many caucuses have so few people, ties are very common, and it's and they don't actually, in most cases, even have ballots. They have a physical division of the room where people go into one corner if they're for Hillary, one corner if they're for, if they were for Bernie, and another corner if they were for uncommitted. That's not undecided, that's uncommitted. And then a corner or a mailbox for the O'Malley folk. If no candidate gets 15%, the people in that gaggle have to divide out and go into one of the other gaggles. It causes all kinds of problems because this could take hours, and then people come and go over this time. So you have, it's never, so the vote count in the Democratic caucus is kind of more art than science. And that's one
of
the
issues. Have you been to one of these caucuses?
No, I would, you know, I know how they operate. I wouldn't, because to me it's a kind of, it's not a real election. It's a kind of, it's an event. It's interesting, but it's not a, it's not voting as we know voting or what voting should be.
Well,
so you know, basically we actually don't know and we'll never know who actually won the Iowa caucus, and that is which, you know, who won the most votes. It was obviously roughly a dead heat, but we will never know.
So it's kind of like the Electoral College, where you can win a caucus like you can win a state by
yes.
99,000 to 1, and then the neighboring state goes 51-49, but it equals out.
That's correct. So that what happens is that it doesn't matter if, that's what I'm saying, probably by popular vote, Sanders won because of the crushing majorities in the college towns. The rest of the state was kind of mixed, mixed response. And much, much smaller. So in rural places, you'll have 12 people show up for a caucus. You know, so it's, it's really unbalanced in terms of numbers. Like I say,
so
I suspect, but I'll never know. I assume simply from the demographics and the reports that I've gotten is that Sanders would have won the vast majority of actual people. But we don't count. They're not counting people. They're counting hundredths of a delegate.
Yeah,
so, but that's
astounding.
You know, that's the least problem that we have of voting in America, as we can get into, I'm sure.
Yes, we will. Bob or Scott or Mark, are you on the air? On Weathers yet? No, they're not. Okay, so it's you and me, Greg. So,
okay, they've been their vote has been in this conversation is now suppressed. Okay.
Yes, exactly right. So this is quite amazing. What's totally amazing to me as we proceed to discuss the mechanics of the voting, but we have to look at the demographics of this race between Hillary and Bernie. Bernie is 74 years old. For God's sakes, he is not even a baby boomer, and he is getting 80-90% support from people under 24. It's staggering.
Yeah, well, it's that sexy hair and that cool dance he does with his hands, kind of like a hip hop Macarena thing that he does.
Right.
But it's but obviously what's happening. And in both parties, is that people are fed up with billionaire rule of this nation. And what they're doing is they're not voting for Sanders or for Trump. They are voting against the billionaires running the show. Ironically, Trump is a billionaire, but he's saying, you know, I can't be controlled by the billionaires because I am one. It's kind of odd because, in fact, if you look at his program, you know, he's talking about no inheritance taxes. And by the way, for people that hear about the death tax, only 5,000 families in America a year, only 5,000 pay an inheritance tax. You have to probably be worth $50, $100 million before that thing kicks in. It's very, very rare. You have to be ultra, ultra rich. You have to be a Trump. So basically Trump is running to give himself a massive tax break, $9 trillion tax cut for Trump. So while he's running kind of against the billionaires and influence, but the important thing is the massive positive reaction to saying the system is bought. And in fact, one thing I just put out, if you go to gregpalace.com, you go to my website, I haven't published anywhere, I just, only for people who go to gregpalace.com, an article I just put out called Who Hatched Rubio? The big, big surprise of the Iowa caucus was not that Bernie may have won or Trump may have lost, but or did lose, is that Marco Rubio overwhelmed all the so-called Republican establishment, other candidates, and almost overtook Trump. Now, how did Rubio, Marco Rubio, a kind of, you know, Ken doll with 12 phrases that repeat, how does Marco Rubio suddenly rise up? So the question is, so I wrote an article called Who Hatched Rubio? And this is the answer. The answer is Paul Singer. Paul Singer is worth $2.7 billion. He is the number one donor to the Republican Party, not the Kochs. The Kochs don't give to the Republican Party, by the way. But that's another story. But the number one donor to the Republican Party is Paul Singer. He's known as the Vulture. And he got that name by the wonderful way he conducts his business. Okay, I've been hunting this guy down for 9 years for BBC Television and The Guardian. For 9 years I've been hunting this guy over four continents. What he does is he chews on the corpse. He makes his money when things die, nations, people, corporations. For example, he was the guy who did what's called a vulture attack on the Republic of the Congo, where he took some, in the middle of a civil war, he bought up some of their debts owed by one of the warlords who took control of the government for a short time. And he bought up some debts of the nation, just crappy piece of paper worth nothing. When democracy returned to the Congo, all the nations of the planet, the IMF, everyone, and the United States Treasury wrote off all the debts that the Congo owed. But Singer then said, yeah, but I've got these old pieces of paper that I bought for $10 million. And he demanded $400 million from the Congo for his $10 million pieces of paper, $400 million, and he got it. And where did that $400 million come from? You and me. The United States Treasury wrote off its debt owed by the Congo so Singer could get his money, and he took money that was meant for to end the cholera epidemic. Nice guy, right? Now
we're talking with Greg Palast here. Greg, mm-hmm. What are your books that are out there that you'd like to
If you want to learn about Paul the Vulture Singer, two books. First is Vulture's Picnic. All these books are New York Times bestsellers. And my latest book is Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. And Greg Palast investigates the Kochs, Karl Rove, and their billionaire buck buddies. Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. Just go to gregpalast.com or, you know, the usual suspects. But
well, you were published by Penguin, is that right?
I was published by Penguin until I decided I didn't like Flightless Birds, and I went to independent publisher Seven Stories Press, and my foundation publishes most of this stuff, including a big best-selling comic book with Ted Rall, and which I wrote with Ted Rall and Bobby Kennedy, called Steal Back Your Vote. You can get all this stuff at gregpalast.com from my not-for-profit foundation, which supports the type of journalism you can't get any Americans to do. You know, I work for BBC TV and The Guardian and Rolling Stone, but when you're talking about mainstream press in America, lamestream press, you're not going to get any of this information you're hearing here from me or Harvey Wasserman, and if we can find Bob Fitrakis, get him out of that bar already. Tell him, off the bar.
Bob, are you on the line? Bob Fitrakis? Sorry, I'm calling in. How about Mark or Scott from RSN?
Not yet. Okay,
all right.
So go to gregpalast.com. The other thing is, so Paul the Vulture Singer, he's number one donor to the Republican Party, so George W. Bush got out of his way to let him steal the money from the Congo. Then he mounted an attack on the nation of Argentina, our ally. Here's what's happening. Where did Marco Rubio come from? Paul Singer, on October 31st, wrote a note that he was backing Rubio. By November 1st, Rubio, who was only getting polling 9%, right? That meant that 10 out of 11 Republicans, forget Democrats, 10 out of 11 Republicans didn't want this guy. But that didn't matter. He got the one vote that counts, Paul Singer, the Vulture. And the minute that happened, I called London to my bookie in London, Paul Krishnamurti. You can bet in London is the only place in the world, really, where you're legally allowed to bet on the outcome of a U.S. election. And the odds shot through the roof for Rubio. Rubio crushes for the Republican nomination. Rubio crushes Cruz. He crushes Trump. He crushes them all. And that was when he had when he was almost invisible, because the professional bettors know this. If Paul Singer backs you, that's the vote that counts. You've got the nomination. Goodbye. That's what happens. That's how the system works. And what do we see in Iowa? Where did Rubio come from? Where did Rubio suddenly, like, boom, shows up with three times the numbers he was polling the week before? The answer was that Singer has the in with the party officials and told them, you move the undecideds and the loose change into the Rubio corner. And it worked. And this will continue through New Hampshire, and watch. Unless something weird happens, lots of things weird have already happened, but the big money, like I say, the smart money is all on Rubio because of one man, Paul the Vulture Singer. What does he want? What does Paul the Vulture Singer want? He wants, first of all, he wants a war, an economic war declared on Argentina. So he bought old Argentine bonds that were issued by the old military dictatorship. Every U.S. bank, which lent money to the dictators, said, okay, we'll take a haircut and we'll take less money in return. But Singer found 3% of the old dictatorship bonds, bought them for $50 million, and for $50 million he's asking for $3 billion, 6,000% return out of the flesh and blood of the people of Argentina. Okay, so now Rubio has backed Singer the Vulture. He tried to pressure the State Department to lean on Argentina. He tried to pressure the Treasury Department. This is for Singer, to attack our own ally. Now, Hillary Clinton got in the way. Hillary Clinton went into a U.S. federal court. She sent her lawyers from the State Department into federal court in New York.
This is when Hillary was Secretary of State.
When she was Secretary of State, to stop Singer's Vulture attack on our ally, saying it was unconscionable, it was wrong, that a guy like Singer is threatening the entire world financial marketplace to make an unethical buck. She really went after him. Now, I have to say, in all honesty, it sounds like she's being a woman for all seasons, you know, great for... The truth is that the big banks of New York don't like Singer the Vulture either, because he's been suing them. He says, whatever money Argentina gave you, I want you now to give that to me. So he was attacking Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan. He was attacking Robert Rubin and Citibank. He's attacking Goldman Sachs. He's attacking United Bank of Switzerland. In other words, these are all the big bank, commercial banks that are backing Hillary Clinton. Okay, so she's acting on behalf of the big banks, and Rubio's acting on behalf of the Vulture financiers.
So this is a clash of the titans here.
It's a clash of the billionaire hedge fund speculators versus the commercial banks who are backing Hillary. So you have this huge financial battle. This is in my book, Billionaires and Ballot Banners. Behind what, you know, the BS about immigration and let's build a wall, you know, hey, Mr. Trump, it's got to be a high wall because most people fly in that don't have documents. No one ever mentioned that. If you build a wall, how tall is it? It's got to be like 35,000 feet. It's not going to work.
Well, what's going to happen, Greg? We're going to wind up with every Mexican pole vaulter.
Right. So it's nuts. And most undocumented people who've come in the last 2 years have come in from Asia, by the way. So it's going to have to be a floating wall. But of course, they don't swim in either. So I don't know how it's, but it's interesting. I like the wall idea. And in fact, last couple of years, we've had a net out migration to Mexico. So you build a wall, it's mostly keeping undocumented people in.
Right.
Never thought of that one. Okay, but that doesn't matter.
And you know, if it's California.
But the real issue, see, that's all baloney, because at the top is the real battle between the banks backing Hillary and the billionaires like Singer, and the Kochs will join in. They follow Singer. They don't give to the Republican Party. They run their own separate operations. But
he's
a real
crazy little weasel. I mean, Rubio is just really, you know, an unctuous little punk. I guess what you're saying then
so that's
is
why you're voting for him? Oh, okay. I mean, I'll tell you something. The one wonderful thing about being a journalist is that I don't take any partisan view. I do strip them all bare, including, like I say, Hillary. I wanted you to know where her money's coming. Now, she did the right thing, but she really did it for
the wrong reasons.
The wrong reasons. Yeah. And so she did it for her donors. But nevertheless, it was the right thing to do to stop Singer the Vulture from savaging our allies to make an extra buck. Now, interesting about Paul Singer, you notice you never hear his name. You hear the Kochs being attacked all the time on MSNBC, or as I call it, MSDNC. But they never mention Singer. Why? Because Singer is the number one donor for gay marriage rights. His son is married to a man. And they say, well, wait, why is he backing Marco Rubio? Rubio's viciously, he's an anti-gay bigot of the worst order. I mean, this man is not nice. He doesn't only say that gay people shouldn't be allowed to get married. I mean, he's a bigot. That's just stone cold. That's not, that's not saying you shouldn't vote for him. But just say, let's know who he is. So why would Singer back someone who hates his son? Because to Singer, another billion is more important than his sonny boy.
Well, we have that actually in Ohio. Rob Portman, the senator here, has mm-hmm. been very anti-gay, but suddenly his son came out as gay, and to his credit, Rob Portman turned around and voted for gay marriage. Greg Palast, the author of so many books, and gregpalast.com. What are your two books that are on your website, Greg?
Well, there's Vulture's Picnic, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, and of course, many of you may have read the Best Democracy Money Can Buy in our madhouse, but Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, and you can also download some of my films that I've done for BBC, which you can't get in America, like The Elections Files, about the continuing theft of the votes in America. That's one problem we have in America. We seem to be allergic to democracy. And
yeah.
While we had the goofy stuff of the Iowa caucus, the more serious thing, for example, that I've been working on, and by the way, I just did some work for Al Jazeera America. That's probably what sank them. And I did an investigation, uncovered something called interstate cross-check, Harvey. You and I have discussed this, but just on the air, I think it's important for people to know.
Yes, we have Greg. We're joined by Bob Fitrakis, my co-conspirator for many years. Bob, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Scott Galindez.
Scott Galindez. You're from Reader Supported News. Now, I do want to mention Bob Fitrakis and I co-authored a piece with Mimi Kennedy, which is on Reader Supported News today, where Scott Galindez is calling us from. And we're going to continue this. Now, Greg, go ahead, and then we'll work in Scott and Bob.
Okay, because I'm going to have to take off for my I got to put back my investigation hat on and get back to work. But by the way, great article. Everyone should read that by Mimi Kennedy and Bob Fitrakis and Harvey Wasserman on the upcoming dangers of the current elections. I'm going to add my 2 cents now, which is cited in that article and reader-sponsored news, which is that something called interstate cross-check, which I just uncovered. There is a list of 7 million people who've been identified by 29 Republican secretaries of state as people who have voted twice in the same election. That's a federal crime. Now, how do millions of people conspire to vote twice, and what's the evidence? Well, oddly, they haven't arrested anyway. I think that they busted 2 people some some poor pensioner who didn't know, who he couldn't remember, he already voted once. But the, but 7 million people committing this conspiracy, the governor of the state of Ohio refused to give me the list, and many other states refused to give me the list. But I got most of those lists anyway. That's what I do as an investigative reporter. And what I found is that the lists were simply lists of common names, like Michael Jackson. The entire Jackson 5 was on that list. And in fact, the entire Jackson 5000 was on that list. Everyone named Jackson. Now, it was Jackson. And now see if you can find a pattern here. The main people listed as double voters were names like Michael Jackson, Jose Rodriguez, David Lee, and Mr. Nguyen. Okay? Are we getting
not
it?
Henry
and then in Ohio, I showed this to Bob Fetrakis. In Columbus, Ohio, there's a lot of people named Mohammed Mohammed. So what's happening is first name Mohammed, last name Mohammed. What they were doing is taking common names. Now, who in America has common names? The history of immigration, the history of slavery, is that the people most likely to have a common name, you can look it up in the Census Bureau, you're 63% more likely to be a racial minority if you have a common name. And so it's a slick way of challenging the votes of minority voters, of Asian American voters, who, by the way, vote 75% Democratic. People don't realize. Talk about a Hispanic vote at 66% Democratic. The Asian American vote is 75% Democratic. That's who they're going after. They're going after everyone named Jose Rodriguez and Maria Hernandez. The Hispanic vote, Michael Jackson, black vote, 53% of all Jacksons are African American. And that's how the game is played. And that's
so
how they're stealing
the
vote.
7 million voters have already been tagged.
Nope.
By this,
what's happening is they send people a postcard. This actually amplifies the racial aspect. And if they don't respond to the postcard, they lose their vote. They send you a postcard. They don't say you're about to lose your vote. They say, please verify your registration. People who are poor lose their job, students, itinerant people, renters. All these people are people whose addresses change and mail doesn't reach them, including homeless people, by the way, who register out of homeless shelters. All these people are less likely to even less likely to return a card. That amplifies the racial and economic bias in this accusing people of voting twice. Now, the interesting thing is in places like Ohio, in Ohio they've accused 600, this is the big swing state, 675,000 people of voting twice. 675,000 people have supposedly voted twice, that is, in two different states in the same election. They have busted one single person. It's a crime. They've got their address. They've got social security numbers. They have their emails and their phone numbers. They got the FBI. And yet, out of 675,000 felony criminals, they've busted one person, someone who voted in two towns, one in Kentucky and one in Ohio, one person. And the answer is, why didn't they bust the others? Not that they're soft on crime. It's that they're not criminals. Their only crime is voting while black or brown or, or Asian. That's the crime that's being committed.
There are between 5 and 6 million people who vote in Ohio. And
yeah.
So you're saying that more than 10% of the people who are eligible to vote in Ohio are being stripped from the voter rolls?
Because you have a crime wave of double voters in Ohio. And you don't take it seriously, do you, Harvey? You don't realize that 1 out of 10 of your neighbors is illegally voting in two states in a single election.
Well, Harvey,
it's either you are living in the most criminal state in America, where 1 in 10 people is a felon getting away with this terrible crime, or you're living in a state in which your Secretary of State, a Republican, is fixing the vote through this ugly racial tactic called interstate cross-check. Go to gregpalace.com. You can see the film I did for Al Jazeera on this. God forbid anyone else picks up. Oh, the New York Times media people picked it up. They said, oh, big scoop again for Greg Palace. Well, why don't you run the story? Don't tell me I have a big scoop. Run the story that this election in 2016 is in the process of being stolen. Go to gregpalace.com, read the stuff. I'm going to yield the floor because I've been talking and yakking to Harvey.
You've been great, Greg.
To my good friend
Bob.
And by the way, for reader-sponsored news, if you guys want to filch my article that's on the front page of gregpalace.com, Who Hatched Rubio. I donated to reader-sponsored, reader-supported news, and I want people to support reader-supported news. What a fantastic site, I'm telling you right now. Great stuff there that you can't get anywhere else.
Thank All right, you. Greg, thank you so much, man. It's always great to have you on. And put your hat on, will you? Okay, Bob and Scott, you with us?
Yep,
I'm here.
Scott Galindez, Bob Strakis. Hello?
Yes, yeah, this is Scott. I'm here.
And Bob, you're here? Where'd Bob go? Bob went away. Okay, Scott. Bob will come back, I'm sure. Scott, you are a reporter for Reader Supported News, is that right?
Correct.
And you were in Iowa.
Yeah, I actually spent a year in Iowa just covering the caucuses. And
a year?
When I first got here, I was more
up?
Interested in the Run, Warren, Run, but that didn't happen, and then Bernie just caught fire.
Well, let's hear about it. Tell us what are your conclusions from the Iowa caucus?
Well, I agree that there's no, we don't really know who won. There were some caucus locations where the caucus chairs didn't show up, and a few, and just people took over and did the counting and everything. But my question is, if the caucus chair didn't show up, did they have the voter rolls? Did they have voter registration? Do they even know whether people were eligible to vote? And if people just that were there just volunteered to take over and ran the caucus, those were the precincts that came in late were people who didn't have the phone number with the app because they weren't supposed to be the caucus chairs. They just took over when the caucus chair didn't show up. And
well, how often did this happen, and how significant was it in counting the vote in Iowa?
I'm not positive. The campaign was talking about that at 1 a.m., and there were still 10% of the precincts out. I don't understand how it could have been ticked, because there was more reporting. There was 95% reporting, but they were talking about 10% of the precincts that weren't adequately staffed, is what the campaign was talking about at that point. And I haven't heard them make any further allegations on that after the 1 a.m. when there was a interview with Robert Becker, the state director. He's the one that was claiming that at 1 a.m., but I think they've moved past that, and they haven't been pushing the issue.
Who has not? Who hasn't
the campaign.
Been pushing the
issue? I haven't heard anything since that around 1 a.m. the night of the caucus.
Were you involved with the Sanders caucus or campaign, or were you just reporting on it? And Bob Strakis, are you there with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I was
okay,
just
so,
I was reporting, and I did caucus because I spent the whole year in Iowa, so I did caucus here.
Well, Greg Palast has said now, and Bob, you can chime in on this, please, that we don't really know what the popular vote was in Iowa. But we would assume if the caucuses were counted equally, in other words, one vote per caucus, but some of the caucuses had more people in them than others, we would assume that Bernie would have won the popular vote. Bob, do you think that's the case?
Well, it would seem like it, but it seemed like my perspective is that there's one thing going on. Hillary Clinton wanted a sound bite that she won in Iowa, whether she actually won, and it looks like I don't think she actually won. It may have even been a dent of heat. You know, last thing I saw was 186 out of 187 reporting, and Hillary's up by two, but Bernie won by two by the guy who didn't know he was supposed to call in, and he was the last guy calling in. So what I really suspect, and having been in a caucus in Michigan in 1918, I mean, not 1918, but 1980, seems like that 1918.
That was your previous lifetime when you were
it was an off-year congressional caucus. But, you know, the rules are often so complicated, as I have no doubt that Bernie probably had far more people out there. But, you know, I remember I was in the caucus in Michigan, and I asked the guy who was going to win, because it was Kennedy, Carter, and some independent forces, Acorn, you know, cutting deals. And this guy looks at me and goes, "We won't know, but don't worry, son." He thought I was with Kennedy. He says, "It's all in Big Daddy's hand." And I look up, and there was this 300-pound party boss who was counting everything.
Well, Scott, were you in any of the caucuses personally, Scott?
Yes, I was. But I just want to correct one thing. It was proportional. Depending on how many people were voting in a precinct is how many delegates were allotted to that precinct.
It wasn't one caucus, one vote.
Right. It wasn't one caucus, one vote.
Well, Scott, you were there. Let's have your gut sense. Did more people vote for Bernie than Hillary, or what do you think?
In the caucus I was in, Bernie won, and what happened is they were really overwhelmed at the caucus I was at. There wasn't enough room in the gym for them to sign everybody in and keep everybody. So once you signed in, you went outside in the cold, and then once everybody was signed in, they brought everybody in and it just packed the gym. So the way they counted was you went back outside and they counted one by one as people went out the door.
So this was the penguin method of counting.
and all the men had to carry a small egg in their feet as they waddled up.
And the same thing happened at other locations, but at one of the locations in Ames, people talked about that the precinct captain was overwhelmed. And there was fighting and everything else about how they were going to count. In the caucus that I went to, the precinct captain kept everything well organized, and the count was accurate. They did the counting going one by one out the door. I guess in Ames, the guy told them for people to go out the door and tell them who they were voting for on their way out the door. That would have been very hard for them to make that tally accurate.
Well,
doing
so
it
we're
that
glad
way.
Here we are in 2016 with a high-tech vote count. I mean, and then all these putzes on CNN, and you know they're all just jumping up and down about how significant and pontificating. And here we have the votes being counted by people being sent outside. I mean, come on.
And then
amazing.
At least six of the state delegates were decided by coin flips.
Yeah, and they're all won by Hillary, right?
Yeah, from what I can tell. There were some reports, but I haven't seen a video of a coin toss that Bernie won. Videos I've seen, Hillary won.
Bob,
that's my theory why Bernie won by a few more votes, because if she was up by two in delegates and the last one was going to Bernie making it a dead heat, she won six coin toss, right? It would be pretty even vote with a few more going to Bernie, because the only reason you tossed a coin was because it was split evenly.
Right,
so,
but
her coin tosses were for
county and state delegates. The coin toss wasn't for the national delegates.
Oh, only for the county and the state?
Yeah, it was just for one, each precinct, like the one I was at, it was 14 delegates, but they weren't national delegates. They were either to the county or the state. I think they were given results for state, so I guess it must have been state for the state.
All right, we're talking with Bob Fitrakis here, the freepress.org. Bob, Mimi Kennedy and I have a piece of reader-supported news on the website. Take a look, and Scott Galindis is with reader-supported news reporting from Iowa. Are you in New Hampshire now, Scott?
I'm still in Iowa right now. I had some health problems at the end and just taking
a little bit of time before
I move on to...
Well, you know, it's nice and warm in New Hampshire, so you'd be a lot healthier there.
Yeah, they made him stand out in the cold too long in Iowa.
So Bob Fitrakis, a publisher of the Columbus Free Press and my co-conspirator on about God knows how many books, you actually were the first one that I know of to essentially report that New Hampshire is the birthplace of electronic vote theft, electronic election theft, dating to the 1988 primary when George H.W. Bush 1, was the vice president, and but trailing Bob Dole on election day, and then there was a 17-point turnaround worthy of the Central Intelligence Agency, and he won. So,
which the Manchester Union leader actually wrote in an editorial, and that it looked like a covert action when Bush beat Dole.
So that was the first use that I know of that I have read of the, of what kind of a, do you know what kind of electronic machines there were?
Oh, no, absolutely. They were Danaher, but the name had been changed to Danaher because they were originally Shooptronic machines, but since Ransom Shoop had been convicted twice for election tampering in Philadelphia, they thought to have his name on these computers would be bad, so they changed them to Danaher, which were, by the way, the same ones used in Franklin County, Columbus, in 2004, considered one of the worst electronic voting machines ever made, unless you wanted to hack it.
Right, and so that, but it was the best one to hack. So do we know of an instance of the use of electronic voting machines to flip an outcome before the primary in New Hampshire in 1988, or is this the pioneer moment?
The problem, all we know is the problems that the Danahers, part of their problem is, number one, is they were paperless. There's really no way to recount them. So that's a problem. I mean, you can hope to print out a log, but there's no paper tally. And another problem, the big problem they had, well documented in Franklin County in 2004, which is known as the Franklin County fade, which meant that when you pushed it, if the settings and so-called calibration was wrong, people push for a carry, his vote would actually disappear after you pushed it. And we've got testimony, much of it on video, of people trying to, in fact, vote before their ex disappears.
So this is like kind of going to the polls and they give you a paper ballot, but they give you disappearing ink.
No, they keep saying the same thing. It's on the screen, right? Yeah. It's on the screen. You push, and it says confirm, right? Because you've pushed once, and then you have to go to the end and hit the green button for the final vote. And all these people said, I pushed for Kerry. It was up there. I went through the whole ballot, and then it's about time to turn green. And I look up, and the Kerry vote has vanished. It was known as the Franklin County fade.
Well, there you go. Scott DeWindis, are you going to go up to New Hampshire and cover the election there?
Not New Hampshire. I'm going to get back on gear and go to the debate in Milwaukee. I think it's next Thursday.
Oh, they're debating in Milwaukee there. So is Scott Walker going to let Bernie and Hillary into the state, or are they going to be deported?
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
So it'll be interesting, yeah. So Bob Fitrakis now. What are we expecting in New Hampshire? Do we know what kind of voting machines they're going to be using this time around?
No, I haven't looked. But, the fact that we allow private, partisan corporations to secretly provide the software and the machines, and they're protected under, trade secrets as proprietary software, is absurd on the face. I don't see how any democracy would allow people to secretly program their hardware and software and allow it to come from partisan companies, Diebold being the most notorious.
It is astounding, isn't it? And, of course, the courts have ruled and I assume, Bob, you being an attorney, you know the detail. The courts have ruled that, to my understanding, that the software on these privately owned voting machines used to conduct our public elections is considered proprietary, and we have no way to monitor these or verify the vote on these electronic machines. Is that correct?
No, absolutely. I don't know why we're not using open source. And again, I mean, the absurdity of this in Franklin County, when we looked at it after the 04 election, the lines of code used on the machines, the Danaher machines in Franklin County, had 2.1 million lines of code. Now, most of the computer people we consulted said counting is one of the easiest things in the world. You know, 1,500 lines of code, real easy to write. It's prime plus. All that it is adding, you don't need really to subtract, although that did happen in 2000 in Florida from Al Gore. And that, why would you have 2.1 million lines of code on a machine unless you wanted to hide some?
And hide it they did. We're talking with Bob Fitrakis, my co-conspirator. Actually, we have a book coming out, going to be called The Strip and Flip Selection of 2016, and how we're going to, it examines the background, and it's a series of PowerPoints, actually, on how the election is certainly going to be unmonitorable in 2016. There's no way that I see that we are ever going to get a reliable, verified vote count in 2016 unless there's a massive change in technology immediately. Scott, they didn't use electronic voting machines, obviously, in Iowa on the Democratic side. Did they do it on the Republican side? What happened? How are the caucuses on the Republican side handled?
The Republican side, you went in and you... It wasn't an electronic voting machine. They just, you put your vote and put it in a box, I think. That's the way it's described. I wasn't in there to see it, so it's just...
Oh, so you didn't go to the...
But they have a paper trail, and there's no paper trail on the Democratic side, except when you sign in, you put your original preference, but then once the caucus starts, people can switch, so there's no paper record of that. So there, in fact, the O'Malley supporters, there were like 36 in the precinct I went to, 25 went to Bernie, 11 went to Hillary. So there's no paper trail of that. And
I don't think it's, do you think they just disappeared, the people who were voting for O'Malley, or did he really not have any support at all?
He didn't have much. What you have to do is you have to get 15% to become viable. If he doesn't get to 15%, then the other campaigns battle over those people. There was shouting matches and everything else in the caucus I was in, and trying to get the O'Malley people to come over to their side. In fact, there was offers made to the O'Malley people. The Sanders campaign offered that two of their delegates would come from the O'Malley people if they came over en masse, and the Clinton campaign was offering three if they would come over en masse. It didn't happen. They didn't agree to come over en masse, so there were no delegates offered, but it made sense for those campaigns, because they could pick up a delegate, and with O'Malley dropping out, the fact that they picked two of their state delegates would be really O'Malley people, wouldn't have an effect on the national delegate level.
Man, this sounds like, you know, this sounds like the 1840s, you know, where people would turn up. I mean, did they give people beer to vote for them? I mean, you know,
hard apple cider.
Yeah. Well, maybe in Iowa in 2016 they give them pot. I don't know, but geez.
Yeah, I don't think there would be primitive. Any. I wonder if you could offer anything. They're offering delegates. I don't know if one-on-one you could offer. Any, just come over to me and I'll fix your car tomorrow. Or
yeah, well, that would make sense, you know, or come sleep with my daughter or whatever. I mean, geez, it's unreal. And that of course, and then you see all these pompous windbags on TV, you know, counting everything like it was the most profound moment in history. So we had Greg Palas telling us now that Marco Rubio is the chosen one of Peter Singer, who, unlike, you know, is giving billions of dollars to the Republican Party. It's my contention that many of the people who voted for Ted Cruz actually thought they were voting for Tom Cruise. And, you know, he managed to muddy the waters there. But so we're really pretty clearly now down to three. I guess Ohio, on the Republican side, I guess Ohio's John Kasich had no impact at all and doesn't show at all in the Republican side in New Hampshire. But, Bob, I think we know what he's holding out for, don't we?
Well, I don't know. But actually, his polls have him as high as second in New Hampshire, even though he only got 2% in Iowa. He's been he actually has a super PAC. And the New York Times gave him their lukewarm endorsement.
Well, they said basically that he was the only one in the asylum that seemed half saint. That was the nature of the New York Times endorsement of John Kasich.
I think the only time he was in Iowa was for a forum or a debate. I don't think he did any campaigning here.
Oh yeah, all right. So, but we all know that he wants to be vice president. I mean, that's basically what this is about. John Kasich knows he's not going to be the presidential nominee, or maybe he doesn't know. I don't know. But, you know, something could happen, I suppose. It is always worth hanging around, I guess, in case lightning strikes or a plane crashes or something like that. But
I thought that about O'Malley, but I was surprised that he attacked Hillary a lot during debates. I figured he was going to be playing to be Hillary's running mate, but he didn't seem to do that.
No, I think O'Malley actually seemed to have some convictions. Obviously, you know, Bernie does, and I have my doubts about Hillary being convicted of anything. I mean, well, maybe she will be convicted, having any convictions. And, you know, so it appears that Bernie is going to trounce her in New Hampshire, but Bob, if they have electronic voting machines, we don't know what's going to happen, right?
Well, yeah, except, I mean, the nature of the machines, it depends on what the polling looks like. You know, most of the times it looks, as we've argued over and over again, you have to get it within some reasonable margin, unless it's a ballot issue. I mean, we wrote the article on the pot issue. I mean, literally the votes are flipping in Ohio after 39% of the vote. And they were blaming it on human transmission error on the legalization of pot in Ohio, which was passing. And then suddenly it was losing 2-1 as it went from 39% of the vote to 48% of the vote. So in these campaigns, usually, you know, they can't really flip more than about, you know, 6%, you know, but that still gives you in the double digits if you flip that. And I'm on the question of who has access to this type of technology. Usually it's always seemed to be around Bush, the Bush family, and Karl Rove. So, but again, I mean, you know, who knows with this stuff? I mean, some of them had remote, access from the parking lot. And the other thing, I think the game... I mean, everyone's on to the voting machines in close elections. I mean, I think the new thing is going to be really the voter polls, which have all gone electronic, particularly in battleground states like Ohio. Remember in 2004, 10,000 people show up in Cleveland to vote, and Diebold had accidentally purged them from the electronic poll books.
10,000 people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, they apologized for it. But, again, it was 10,000 people in Cleveland that voted 81% for Kerry.
Yeah, right. So, well, we don't know what we're going to expect now in New Hampshire.
I guess Casey could make a play, but, you know, he is...
Well, they're predicting he's headed for second place.
Well, that would throw a wrench in the whole situation there, and we'll see what Trump comes up with. But it seems to me that if nobody from the Democratic side says anything about electronic voting machines in the general election, leading up into the general election, then they can just forget about it. Because, Bob, as you and I have shown, you know, in Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, Michigan, Iowa, and Arizona, the six of the key swing states, nobody's going to win this election without carrying at least some of those states. And you have Republican governors and Republican secretaries of state and an overwhelming vote being cast on electronic machines. I don't see how any Democrat, either Hillary or Bernie, stands a chance in the fall if that's not dealt with.
But going back to Greg's point, in order, I mean, they really need to strip the voting rolls to get it close enough if they want to play around with electronic voting. And I think that's why, you know, this multi-state cross-check is so important. I mean, a lot of people forget between the 2004 and 2008 election in Ohio, after a public records request by the Free Press, we found they had stripped 1.25 million voters in Ohio, almost all of them in the nine industrial centers, disproportionately a majority of them black, but really black, poor, and, of course, minority voters. So I think they're going to, I think Greg's right, you know, they're going to go after the 700,000 or so supposed double voting, double registered people who aren't really double registering. And we know a hardcore Democrat like yourself, even though you're not really, was challenged. What year was that? Where they sent you a letter claiming?
I was challenged. Well, that's because there are six Harvey Wassermans in the state. We all were voting at the same time. We're about out of time. Bob Strake is a publisher of Columbus, the Columbus Free Press, and www.freepress.org. Scott Galindis from Reader Supported News. We have a piece, Bob, Mimi and I, on Reader Supported News. We'll do this again next week. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.